I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast for Yahoo Sports Canada. I'm your host, William Liu. Joining me to discuss everything Raptors is Raptors writer extraordinaire, reporter extraordinaire, Michael Grange of Sportsnet. Grange, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Well, thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate your time, everything like that. Let's dive right into the meat of this thing, because you wrote what I thought was a very eye-opening story. This is about, I guess, almost 2 weeks ago now, but on Sportsnet, the title is called Many Factors at Play as for Ujiri as Raptors contract decision draws near. I thought it was a very informative piece, kind of covered all of the grounds of what could be possibly happening with Masai. Obviously, he's entering the last year of his contract, this current one. And, you know, we do keep asking him about the contract situation, and he keeps coming up with the creative excuses as to why it's not signed. So I'll just ask you, Mike, what's going on? What, you know, what's going on here?
Well, I think there's a bunch of different factors. And I do think the pandemic has kind of been a fairly legitimate excuse for some of the stuff dragging on. But even before the pandemic struck, I mean, it was back in January, February, I think it was kind of November, if I'm getting my facts right, November of 19 into February of 20, kind of the New York stuff was really percolating a lot. And, you know, a lot of people thought that was just BS. And, you know, I'm very confident that there was, you know, some real meat on that bone, that there was, it was more than just kind of rumor. It was, there was a real opportunity there. And I think he was very intrigued by it. And, you know, I think what happened there was, you know, James Dolan just ran out of patience. He did not want to have to wait. And that, I think that was one factor. And I think MLSC and Larry Tannenbaum kind of, they came back hard. They were like, you know, we are not tolerating this, and we'll show tampering, every other kind of means in the book. So I think it just, you know, it just was too big a hurdle for the Knicks, and it would have required too much patience. But in saying all of that, you know, I think what kind of came out of that notion was, you know, you really got a sense that Masai Ujiri wanted to test the market. He wanted, you know, he's like all of us, we've seen, you know, all these superstars kind of really use leverage, really use, you know, the ability to get to free agency to find the next best opportunity for them. And it kind of serves two purposes. It sort of focuses the organization they're on now to make sure that they're on guard, and you know, you don't want to be the team that lets down LeBron in his contract year. And it also allows you to kind of survey the landscape, maybe send signals out there to other organizations that if they get their ducks in a row, there could be an opportunity. And I think, you know, so I say all of that because that's February of 20. We have the pandemic in March. And I think, you know, I think independent of the pandemic, I think we'd be here anyway. I don't think Masai Ujiri was in a rush to sign anything. I'm not sure that now he's in a rush to sign anything. And I think it's for all those reasons I've just touched on. Like, he's waiting to see what that next best opportunity might be. And in the meantime, the benefit is he can really, you know, keep some pressure on MLSE, especially during the camp pandemic, when it'd be very easy to say, listen, we got to pull back here. We got to, you know, we can't really make a commitment there financially, you know, because of revenues. And, you know, clearly that's, you know, that's something Masai Ujiri would want to kind of make sure that the organization he was with wouldn't use as an excuse. So, so I think that's where we're at. This is a long answer, but we're kind of, you know, where I thought we would always be, that, that, you know, kind of into this last year of the deal, still nothing signed, nothing imminent. And I think that all suits Masai Ujiri very well.
Yeah. I mean, look, we're talking about one of the best executives in the sporting world, for sure. Do not envy MLSC having to negotiate with Masai. I feel like that's probably difficult. Okay, so in the piece, you mentioned that Masai on his next deal will earn something in the neighborhood of $12 million, which is, I believe Phil Jackson got something similar with the Knicks. Obviously, that's like Phil Jackson or something.
Yeah, I think his number was 11, and so that's 11? Why it starts at 12. Yeah, so it's okay. Like he'll be number one. And yeah. You know, I talked to one person who's got a lot of experience negotiating some of these executive compensation deals. And you know, not only would he be number one, he would be in a position where that deal would open up if someone surpassed him. So, I mean, he's really right now as peak as you can be in terms of value and leverage. And you know, clearly one is because he's proven to be a pretty effective executive, right? Like he's won, his teams have won. I think if you go back to Denver, I think his teams have won an average of like 54 games a year. They've made the playoffs every year. So, I mean, it's not just a short-term blip. And as we know, as he's done it mostly with, I'm not going to say he's had some great players, but you know, he hasn't really, he had 1 year when he had an acknowledged superstar and he won an NBA title. So, so there's that, but also I think he's the man of the moment, right? Like, I mean, he's a leader, a galvanizer. I think, you know, you'd never trivialize it this way. And I'm not trivializing it, but I think as a black man, as an African man, I think he also, there's a kind of an added weight to his presence that, you know, any forward-thinking organization would appreciate, and would, I think it means something in the NBA. So, you know, he's in a great spot.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think he brings, I mean, very few executives are A, just as good as Masai, but I think no other executives currently bring the kind of the cultural leadership that Masai does. And I think that is very, very valuable, especially because it's not just a moment for Masai. He's been doing this for at least, you know, a decade. I mean, I remember reading stories about when he was about to be hired for GM of Denver, and he told the owners, it's like, if you don't give me this 50 extra K to send to my, you know, Giants of Africa program, I'm not going to sign this deal. And they're like, you're really going to not take a GM deal for 50 K. And he's like, yes. And they gave him the deal. And obviously that was a fantastic choice. Two questions about the $12 million thing. A, is that figure good with MLSC? Because that is a pretty high number. And what other teams would even be in the market for something like that? Because I definitely know there's some Tillman Fertittas of the world who probably won't be spending $12 million on an executive.
I think we can safely say that Tillman Fertitta could come with $120 million. And Masai Ujiri would be like, nah.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think there's, you know, there's a couple of organizations you probably count out because of politics and things like that. But 100% there, MLSC would be good with that. I mean, okay. I mean, MLSC kind of gets a little bit of a bad rap. I'm not, probably less so now, but I mean, they are a great ownership group. They really are. I mean, people who have left the organization to go other places would have told me that, like, it's just an awesome place to work, period. But even in the context of, or maybe especially in the context of other NBA teams or sports teams. And what do they pay DeMar Carroll?
I was gonna say,
you know, so I think the money is not going to be an issue. And league wide though, I think there is, especially coming out of a pandemic, I think there would be a shorter list of organizations that would want to just break the bank. You know, there's a lot of sharp executive minds out there. I don't think you need to pay $12 million to get one. And I think from the flip side is also true. I don't think Masai Ujiri is looking to, you know, spend the prime of his career in Memphis, no offense to Memphis, but I don't think it's, you know, where he would have the platform that to do all the other things that are important to him. So, you know, you're really talking, and that's why I think this deal has kind of dragged on a little bit is, you know, you're talking the Clippers and the Lakers, last we checked, those jobs are filled. Yep. Let's check back on the Clippers. But, you know, you got Brooklyn and the Knicks. Again, same thing.
Yep.
I think Chicago, they obviously just started with a new ownership group. You know, maybe Miami. Well, there's nothing going on in Miami. You know, it really is a pretty short list of teams that would look to make a splash like Ogiri would provide and could afford it. So, you know, that's another factor in all of this.
Yeah, it's actually interesting to bring up Miami because I did see this recent piece about how the Ogiri family purchased a $2.6 million house in Miami. Yes. This is in January. So this is not like related to, I don't know, the relocation or anything like that. But that was interesting. But I mean, I think Miami is pretty concrete with their ownership situation or their management situation. I just thought it was interesting. Okay, so in the piece, you talk about maybe some changes in the MLSC board that might factor into this. Can you just walk us through what are those changes and why would that matter in this situation?
Well,
maybe how MLSC works too, because I think a lot of people get confused. Yeah.
Yeah. So MLSC is owned by three entities. One is Bell, one is Rogers, who I work for, and one is Larry Tannenbaum's holding company. So Bell and Rogers own 37.5% each. The Tannenbaum group owns 25%. And there's, I think there's eight positions on the board. Three belong to Bell, three belong to Rogers, and two are effectively Tannenbaum's. Mm-hmm. So that's eight, right? Six, six, eight. Yeah, 3-3-6-8. And for the longest time, right, basically the entire time that Ogiri's been with MLSC, you know, he could count on Tannenbaum's votes. There was never, ever going to be a question there. And he could count on not just the support, but the enthusiastic support of George Cope, who carried the three Bell votes. So you have five out of eight. And, you know, no offense to Rogers or anyone that works here, they'd be more affiliated or associated with the baseball side. You know, they own the Blue Jays and things like that. You know, I don't think that, you know, Ed Rogers or now Melinda Rogers are kind of good, would pretend to be big basketball people. Not that that necessarily matters, but like George Cope, for example, was a basketball guy. He played basketball at Western. I think his son played as well. So it really was something that was maybe more near and dear to his heart. And there was an other element there where George Cope, he was kind of instrumental in the beginning of the Bell Let's Talk campaign. So I think there was a connection there with, you know, the kind of foundation work and public leadership that Ogiri's shown. So for his entire time here, he's had a really, really good relationship with the board of directors and could proceed with confidence in almost any direction. He got 100% support. And the evidence of that would be, you know, one thing I did touch on in the piece, when he was recruited by then MLSC CEO Tim Leiwicki, you know, there was like this list, like, these are the things I want. I want a G League team. I want complete and utter control. I want a new practice facility. I want to host the All-Star game. I want support from my foundation. I want to win. And then Tim Leiwicki was like, great, let's do it. And we, you know, I think it gets underrated actually what, you know, the championship is incredible, obviously, but those things, getting them done. And I think they got them all done by 2016. That was amazing. Yep. You know, I mean, I thought in 2016 when the Raptors went to the conference finals, you know, he should have been a GM of the year. Like, there was no doubt in my mind. Like, they hosted the All-Star game, they opened the practice facilities, started the G League team all at once. So, and won. But, and so I think the context here is, you know, the board has changed a little bit. George Cope retired. So there's a new presence from the Bell side. There's some new faces on the Rogers side. And this is not to suggest that all of a sudden there's going to be a conflict or there's tension. Mm-hmm. It's just the dynamics of that board haven't been tested yet. I think they will be through this season when you could take, you know, a massive hit in revenues and what are you willing to invest in? And all of that. And I think there's probably also a little bit of an element of, you know, once you've accomplished everything that Ogiri's accomplished, like, what's your next wish list? So he's got to come up with that, be reassured that they'll commit to it. And I think, you know, you look at what Golden State's done this year, I think their complete salary obligation with luxury tax, is it some crazy number? Like
it's like 175 or something.
Plus, but luxury tax on top of that. I think it's like about $230 million.
Yeah.
And they won 15 games last year. So that's where the NBA is. I mean, take the pandemic out of it. Like it's, you know, I presume things get back to normal and it's going to remain a very expensive league to win in. So, you know, so I think one element there is the jury wants to be 100% confident that the board has the same commitment that they've demonstrated in the past 7 or 8 years. I don't think that's going to be a big problem. I've never heard or there's been no indication that that's going to be a huge stumbling block, but you know, it is an element.
Well, I mean, it also helps that the Raptors of today are not the Raptors before Masai took over. Like, this is a highly profitable organization. They bring in huge revenues. The value of the organization is, I don't know, at least doubled, I would say, in the last...
I think MLSC as a whole, and that includes the hockey team, the soccer team, the arenas, et cetera, it's got to be over $5 billion now.
Yeah, exactly, like right?
You know, it's and they bought it. Bell and Rogers bought it, I think, for 1.3. So that was the valuation at the time. They did pretty well. And that's not all that long ago. So anyway, but yeah.
Yeah, that's a great investment. Okay, so we've talked a lot about the MLSC side of things. I guess the bigger question is, what does Masai want? Because it seems like MLSC is very happy with Masai for good reason.
100%. They would sign this deal yesterday.
Yeah. So what is Masai want? You mentioned Masai had the list before it got done. What is Masai's new list? And honestly, does that align with what he could be possibly doing in Toronto with that list?
Yeah, I think in Toronto, like, what he'd be looking for is just like unquestioned 100% commitment of making this one of the world's great sports organizations, right? And making every investment at every turn to advance that cause. And, you know, like I said, there's no indication that it hasn't been the passion. I think MLSC deserves really high marks for what they've done on the hockey side. When you look in the aggregate between hockey, soccer, and, you know, now with the basketball team, like it's a pretty forward thinking that org that's willing to invest in things other than what you can immediately see. So like, you know, medical and all that kind of stuff. We keep hearing and seeing first class. So I think that's fine. But that's would be an expectation going forward. I think the biggest challenge for Masai is, you know, if he really wants to take Giants of Africa, for example, I think they were in 9 countries prior to the pandemic.
Right.
I might be wrong on that, but it was growing, but you know, there's a lot of logistics to that. Well, I think he wants that thing to be pan-African. I think there's got to be 50, 60 countries in Africa. Again, I'm not a geography major, so don't embarrass me if I'm way, way off there. But, you know, it's a vast continent. It's culturally diverse. There are challenges at every turn to do business, let alone NGO work there. But that's his kind of vision. Like he's right. Not thinking, I want to run a few basketball camps and build some courts. Like he wants to be a major, major player in the revitalization of the entire continent. That is requires a couple of things. It requires a lot of his time and energy, and it requires a lot of a big platform, access to people who can help make that happen. You know, so I think he'd be looking for that kind of support going forward. And that's why the New York rumor and even the Washington rumor kind of had a little legs, right? Because all of a sudden, if you're in those environments, you're, you know, down the street from the UN, or your access to the quarters of real power is, you know, unlimited almost. Mm. And I think, you know, that, and so I think that's something you'd be looking for. Again, those jobs don't come open all the time. So, you know, there's no guarantees. And if you're not going to go, so this is an interesting element that was laid out for me as well, is if there's not an immediate job as a president of a basketball operation in like a premier market, you know, that pops open, then, you know, maybe it's something to do with ownership. And, you know, that kind of maybe opens up the playing field a little bit. I mean, you know, the Atlanta situation is settled, for example, but if you were putting together an ownership group and you wanted to buy, you know, a team, you know, any team in the league almost, and you really wanted to make a splash, and, you know, wouldn't you want to maybe have Masai Ujiri as part of that group, you know, and you say, okay, well, we'll, you know, you put some skin in the game here, but you put in 5%, we'll make that 5%, 15% or whatever. I don't know how all these things work, but that changes the equation too. All of a sudden, you know, not only making 12, 15 million a year, you've got, let's just say 10% of a franchise that you're buying in for at $2 billion. So, you know, that's a couple hundred million in equity that grows. I think those conditions are difficult to meet here in Toronto because you got two publicly owned companies. So, you know, I think reopening the ownership agreement here could be a little tricky. So those are the kinds of things, you know, NBA expansion. I have been told by, you know, two people who are in very, very good position to know that that's, you know, going to be on the horizon. And it makes perfect sense that it would be on the horizon. I mean, the league hasn't expanded, I think, since 2003 or four. You look at the way the games expanded in the last, let's call it 20 years. Certainly, you know, there's room for another couple of franchises. And oh, by the way, when you look at the math, if you say, you know, if you look at the two teams, let's call the franchise fees a couple of billion each. You divide by the existing 30 teams, it's about 130, 140 million each. Wow. How much did they lose during the pandemic? About 130, 140 million. Yeah. So, you know, it's a little bit too elegant. And by the way, where would be the number one logical, you know, no-brainer slam dunk expansion market? Be Seattle. Who works in Seattle?
Your boy, Tim.
Tim Lywicki, right? He's running the hockey. Yeah. He's running a company that owns a hockey team out there. So, again, that's like some speculative dot connecting.
Right.
But yeah, I think that's, you know, that's where you need to think a little bit when you're wondering what's next for Masai Ujiri.
Yeah. And listen, Tim's a big ideas guy.
Awesome. He was awesome. He's an awesome, awesome executive. He did incredible things here in Toronto. Yeah, can't deny
I was going to say, I mean, you know, TFC, the Raptors. I mean, even the Leafs making the playoffs.
100%.
You know, so much success attributed to them. Okay, so one more question about Masai, and then maybe we kind of focus on the rest of the thing. So you mentioned two sides having talks since February. How did that meeting go? So this is like after the you know, the Knicks talk was out there, and then of course, you know, the two sides maybe come to the table a little bit. I'm assuming it wasn't like a smashing success considering he's not signed. But how, any details on what happened?
My understanding is there's no animosity. I think the meeting was preliminary. It was kind of along those lines of, you know, what's the board going to look like? Where does your level of commitment? You know, let's keep talking sort of thing. So I don't, and then the pandemic struck. So I think if anything, that's maybe where momentum may have lagged a little bit is, you know, there's just so many moving parts going on. And, you know, like, so, you know, and I do think Masai wanted to get all of his, like, kind of lieutenants taken care of before him. So that's all done. So, although we keep hearing Bobby's nearly done, but we never actually hear that he's done. So I think that's, it was kind of preliminary. And, you know, the one thing I would say about all this is it probably could have been avoided had after the title, you know, they just sat down and said, look, what do you want? And maybe it would have been a little easier done then. But I always kind of take it a little bit from the other point of view too, is they had renegotiated Masai's contract, I think a couple of years before when the next stuff circulated. And he still had 2 years on his deal when they won. You know, there was a big championship bonus in there.
You know what I mean?
So if you're the employer, you're like, wait a second, you got 2 years left on your deal. We just cut you a check for, I don't know, millions.
Yeah.
You know, by the way, it's like, I've got to, you know, I'm about, you know, let's, like, I kind of don't really give it, you know, I cut him a little slack, to be honest. Like, I don't think that was some fatal error that should be held against him.
Yeah, that's like a hindsight 2020 kind of thing.
Barely, to be honest. So anyway, so I don't think there's animosity. I think the relationships are still good. But it really is just Masai just, you know, wanting to take as much leverage and time as he has available to him, and he has a lot.
Yeah. Well, he's a patient man. That's part of what makes him a great exec. All right. So then this is just a shot in the dark. Does the Giannis re-signing in Milwaukee affect this, if at all? I think people have maybe speculated the rumor that obviously there was a connection there. Raptors put all some eggs, maybe not all their eggs in the 21-21 basket, but some
eggs. Of eggs in it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Serge and Mark are partially not here because of that. So.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if it's connected and, okay. I mean, it would be, I don't think so.
All right. Well, on the Giannis front. So then, you know, obviously the Raptors had made plans 2021. I mean, to be honest, the free agent market that year looks to be weakening quite a bit.
it's yeah.
LeBron yeah, so resigned.
Like, it just looks like, Giannis? DeMar, Victor Oladipo. I mean, you know, it's not quite as sexy.
It's not quite as sexy. I think Kyle might be one of the best free agents that year.
Yeah, he's going to get paid.
And he's going to get paid, maybe by the Raptors.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, I'd be interested in your opinion on this, but if I was in their shoes, I'd get OG done now. You know, I think having all that cap space is awesome, but it can kind of lead you to mistakes too, right? Like if you.
Well,
you know, like, you know, I think if you take care of OG and, you know, you kind of move a little forward that way, it's, you still would have a significant amount of cap space, but you can use it to, you know, you don't have to go get a max player, right?
Yeah.
And how many guys getting max actually deliver max? Like, it's a pretty short list.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think actually, if you look at it now, it's almost a 50-50 proposition. Like some people, it depends on the player. I mean, if you're signing LeBron to the max, 100% you're getting a value back.
He's worth double max.
Right? Yeah, you're probably three times. Yeah, I mean, look, if you sign OG now, what's the price? 20 million? Probably starts 20. I mean, you look at the Jeremy Grant situation. I mean, he's probably better than Jeremy Grant. But oh, I think so. Restricted. Yeah. If you get OG to 20, I'd be pretty happy. And I do think that, yeah, I mean, what the rap, especially with the max fringes out there, unless you're like the biggest Rudy Gobert fan, you love the fact that he posts a triple double with screen assists, which is probably my favorite stat is the counting the screen assists right now. Then yeah, you're probably not going to be spending the max on like a Victor Oladipo. That screams like, okay, we've just signed Gordon Hayward to the max, for example. It makes more sense to divide that cap room at least two ways because there are other roster constraints, right? You're looking at the center position. That's not settled. I don't even think it's great for this season, let alone going forward. So,
right.
Yeah.
Divide and I mean, up Baines that cap is 34, room. Right? So it's not like,
yeah.
You know, like I think he's obviously, he looks like he's in good health, good shape, very durable guy, but you're not going to throw 3 years at him.
No.
You know what I mean? I don't think. So
were you surprised by the, you know, by the Chris contract?
Sorry, the Chris,
the Boucher contract.
A little bit. I mean, I think in the context of, you know, the whole Serge thing, you know, I think, I don't know if it gets interpreted the way I interpret it is like, there's all this love and respect for Kyle Lowry, deservedly so. So if he's this important to your franchise, why wouldn't you max, you know, put everything into making this year the best year it could be, because you don't know what's going to happen next year with him. And he's still close to his peak. And that's why the Serge thing, you know, I was never sold on bringing both Serge and Mark back. I thought Mark was so bad for most of last year, or certainly after I didn't have a problem him not coming back. Mm-hmm. I know all the advanced numbers, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But to me, you know, a better center tandem would be Baines and Serge. Like, I think there's no doubt that that's better than Serge, than Baines and Boucher. And if it took, you know, I think the numbers were in that $12 to $14 million range. And if it took for 1 year, I get why you didn't want to give him two. But if you go to 16-17 for one, he only got two at 18, I think, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would certainly get his attention. It keeps your cap space clean, cap sheet clean for next year. And what would it really take to get there? Okay, you shave $1.5 million off of Chris. was really somebody really going to come and offer Chris Boucher more than $5 million bucks in risk?
That's why I was
in RFA.
Yep.
You know, I don't.
Maybe
think
you
so.
Like you know, you use a pick, get rid of and the Stanley money, like.
Yeah, and if you have to, right.
There was very
if somebody
easy
does
ways
make
to get
a run,
to
if he does, someone does make a run at Chris, and you got to sign it for more than you want to. I don't know. It just seems a little. I just think that you could have made a bigger effort to get Serge. I'm not sure exactly why that deal broke down. I suspect maybe it was something more than just money. So yeah, I mean that's a kind of curious one to me.
Yeah, that was a little strange as well. I got it in the context of Giannis, I guess, but you know.
Yeah, I don't think you needed to go an extra year to catch Serge. I think you could have got him for 1 year, but you might have had to touch the cap or touch, you know, get into luxury tax. And as you say, though, maybe you attach a second to Stanley Johnson or 2 seconds to Stanley. Do something.
And
it gets you back under. So I don't think it's impossible. So we'll see.
Yeah. All right. Last question before we go. We talked a lot about Masai. We talked a lot about MLSC, all this other stuff. If Masai does walk, it seems like Bobby is going to be the successor. You know, it makes sense. You promote the GM. I guess my question is, how much does Bobby do right now? Because I think that's always a little bit confusing to some people. We know he was a big player in the Kawhi talks, for example. How much does Bobby do now? And I don't know, what's your level of confidence of Bobby taking over? Because it seems like Bobby gets rave reviews everywhere, and he's gotten quite a few interviews to run, I believe, Sacramento and Chicago this past year.
Yeah, I think Bobby does a ton. You know, I think Masai's still very engaged. I mean, he was in the bubble for 10 weeks, right? Like, the guy's not passing through. But it's, you know, I know he still goes on his scouting trips and, you know, but I think, you know, the day-to-day minutiae, I think he's delegated a lot. And I think that's good leadership too, right? Like, I mean, his staff has grown. He does a really good job with that. I know Masai's consulted kind of leadership coaches, so to speak. And that's a big thing in big successful companies is, you know, these guys grow a business because they're control freaks, but the business eventually bottlenecks because you can't control everything. So you got to learn to back off. And I'm not saying Masai is a control freak. I'm just saying, I think he's really invested in having his people grow and take more responsibility. So I think Bobby is very much the GM. I mean, I think on the decision-making side, obviously Masai is right in there, but in terms of executing and the day-to-day, you know, Bobby's, you know, carrying the heaviest load for sure. Dan Tolsman too, like, I mean, and Patrick Engelbrecht, I think that staff is really you know, and Teresa gets all the dirty work, I think. She gets all the hard stuff, but let's set up in Tampa Bay in 2 weeks, Teresa.
Yeah.
Go for it. you know it's a little
say,
bit
yeah.
Anyway, but so I think Bobby's, you know, fully capable. I think he's got a great demeanor. I think he's got all the attributes. I think the one thing we haven't seen, and I can't really say I think it's safe to say, like, he's not Masai Ujiri. Like he is not a charismatic leader that kind of sets the tone for an entire organization and can sell a sport to a country. You know, I mean,
yeah,
but who's, there's no one out there like that.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's probably, you know, it's like, you know, being the wrong, you know, it's like being on a talk show and following like the stand-up guy who just kills it. Right.
You're
like,
yeah.
You know, there's not much you can do. So, but I think you're in good hands if he's your GM. I mean, he's, you definitely lose presence in terms of what Masai brings outside of basketball.
Well, you didn't enjoy his post-COVID announcement by the Raptors press conference where he said, I can't comment on that like 15 different ways in the span of 5 minutes.
It is what it is. So, yeah, Masai's better at no comment than Bobby. He's a better disassembler.
Masai launches into like a very riveting speech for like 2 minutes and you forget what your question was.
Exactly.
Originally,
Masai did, you know, any thoughts on who he might have taken the second round? Well, let me talk about, you know, the pandemic and global issues.
Yeah.
So
yeah, anyway. No, he's a Masai is a master at that. But I mean, look, I think Bobby is. I mean, he deserves a chance definitely to run a team, and he will one day.
If it's not here, it's going to be somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, is there any concern Masai just take some of these guys? If let's say worst case scenario, Masai goes somewhere else, you would imagine he would take at least some staff with him.
All the staff. Except for Bobby, and Bobby's, as we understand, is very close. There'd be a lot of non-compete language in those deals. And, you know, I think getting back to Masai, I think, you know, my prediction is he ends up signing something with Toronto that's relatively short term. I don't think it's going to be like a 5-year deal. I think he's going to be looking for something with a lot of flexibility in terms of, you know, could he, for example, interview with another team without having to ask for permission first, those kinds of things. Could he exit the deal without non-competes and stuff? But I think the one thing any intelligent organization would do is, okay, Masai, you're leaving, but you can't like strip mine the whole organization and leave us dangling.
Right.
Like, like, I mean, you know, I don't think that's going to happen. So, yeah.
That's good. Yeah, I mean, it didn't happen in Denver. That's for sure.
I think it's pretty standard. It's, you know, maybe I'm trying to think of some examples, but like, you know, Daryl Morey hasn't pulled the front office with him from.
Yeah, exactly.
For example, I think the language in those deals is usually pretty strict on that stuff.
All right, Michael, I think we are sufficiently maybe scared or as unsettled as before.
I think he's going to be back. I do think he's going to be back. I just don't think the story is going to go away. Like, I don't think he's going to be here for life, but I think he will be here for the next 2-3 years.
Nobody's here for life, man. So, all right, Grange, thanks so much for coming on. You know, definitely read, watch, listen to all your work. You still gonna be part of the broadcast? I mean, I don't know how all these broadcasts are gonna work.
I think we're doing it from Scotiabank Arena, like in the practice facility there. So me and Sherman and Brad. So revving up pretty soon. Should be fun.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.